You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, beautiful listeners. In this last episode, I said I was going to talk about money and investing, but I only briefly touched on it, so I'll continue the discussion here today. But I'd be remiss if I didn't first share a few thoughts on last week's blog article. It was titled, Why Nice Guys Finish Last, An Open Letter to Men, and some of the feedback I received. I would say feedback from men was overwhelmingly positive. Actually, there was no negative feedback from men, now that I think about it. And as far as blog articles go, if you're looking for something short to read, the one called Intoxicating Kindness has been read way more than others I've written recently, for whatever reason. People seem to like kindness. I've thrown it in the title of the last two articles. Or maybe it's intoxication that attracts people. Or both. Anyway, give it a read if you're looking for something to read. In this most recent piece, there were two women who commented on the article when I posted it on Facebook, both of which I'm quite fond of. One I spent a lot of time with when I was in fifth grade. The other I worked with in my 20s, and she's a great salesperson, and I've kept in touch with her because I like her a lot. Their comments were as follows. First gal says, yikes, this is kind of frightening. Yeah, that's why I wrote it. She says, I think I'll have my students analyze it for our gender unit. I don't know what that is, but she says, I think your logical fallacy is either or. You have to see the gray. I'm with a nice guy, and I wouldn't want it any other way. This is a very male perspective. Just so readers know, if I ever write from the female perspective or trans perspective, I'll give you a heads up first. She concludes, why does it have to be about power with the hand over the face emoji? Second gal said, to an extent, society has conditioned women and men this way, but the reality is women want a nice guy with a backbone. The toxic masculinity that's been conditioned in y'all often doesn't allow those two things to exist because of what men deem as weak. Not all men, most men. We do not want to feel like the alpha in the relationship, meaning the men as the protectors with a backbone, not homework, life, gender, role, BS. Especially when we feel like that in almost every aspect of our lives, we want a break and, let's face it, feel like the societal woman in the relationship. But that's just my opinion, with a couple of smileys. My thought is, I wonder if those women think I should change the title of the article. But I very much appreciate thoughtful commentary. It happens a lot where I'll post something for public consumption, and it leads to deeper conversations in real life. And I'm a sucker for deep thoughts, a la Jack Handy from SNL. All right, let's do money talk. We'll start at the top with some of the wealthier folks among us, and then we'll work our way down to we peasants. How's that? For those with a seven-figure net worth, it is as though the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, is welcoming you to play in the big leagues, or if you have a verifiable $200,000 income. That would qualify one to be considered an accredited or sophisticated quote-unquote investor. That's what they call them. I've told this story once before, but I was walking through the wealthiest zip code in Houston with a buddy of mine, and we're looking at these mega mansions, and one of them was owned by Jim Crane, the guy who purchased the Astros from Drayton McLean back in 2010. Listen to this story. I had a buddy who worked as a leasing agent, and Drayton McLean walks in, who is a billionaire with a B, and he was required to put in the blank what his monthly income was. What would you put? If you were worth over $1 billion and some 30-something-year-old leasing agent said, oh, what's your monthly income? I need to make sure you qualify. Dude makes, I don't know how much he makes, but let's just say conservatively he were invested like the average Joe can walk into a bank right now and get a savings account at 4.8%. The rates have gone down a little bit lately. And you had $1 billion invested in this savings account. That would be $48 million a month. No, $48 million a year, which is $4 million a month. You think he put $4 million in the blank? No, he did not. He put $200,000. Speaking of, I had a buddy when I was in my early 20s who had just gotten a bank job in Louisiana back when No Limit was in its heyday. Remember Master P, make him say, And he said sometimes they would pull up Master P's bank account just to see all the commas, which I'm pretty sure is against the law. You're not supposed to do that. Those bank employees get a little thirsty sometimes. I had this happen to me once. I had one comma, three digits either side. And this dude, young guy, asked me if I wanted some coffee. Well, I didn't see any coffee anywhere. So I was thinking, like, was he going to go to Starbucks for me? And they surely didn't ask me if I wanted cream or sugar back when I was depositing my Burger King checks. Then as I tell him I've got an important meeting to get to, he introduces me to two people on the way out and then proceeds to open the door for me to that little foyer area, you know, the area that is in glass and they have two doors, like the foyer, like if you were leaving the bank with a stocking cap over your head, you'd be locked in that little room. Well, he not only opened that first door, but he proceeded to open the second door. I almost thought he was going to walk me to my car and give me a big hug and tell me not to leave, like he was my high school girlfriend or something. But he didn't do that, and I left, and I've never had that experience again. Of course, I don't have that much money in a savings account anymore. So, just thinking out loud here, I used to sing truffle butter to my wife when we first met. You know the part that goes, "I ain't nothing like your last dude. What's his name? Not important." And she didn't like that. So I'd say, well, I'm so heartless, thoughtless, lawless, and flawless. Born in New Orleans, get killed for Jordans. Yeah, I would do that. All of which is probably true, by the way. I was born in New Orleans, and when I was a kid, it was very common to see on the 10 o'clock news people shooting each other over Jordans in the projects. So yeah, fresh sheets and towels. Man, she gotta love it. I'd love to hear about the first pair of Jordans you ever owned. Mine were the Air Jordans 4, 1989. I was in fourth grade. Messiano's class. No issues with her. By the way, I'm doing what Donald Trump calls the weave. I'll get back to the high net worth individuals here in a second. I've mentioned every teacher I've had from kindergarten up to fourth grade. Coming for you next, Miss Danos. Nobody liked Miss Danos. Not the boys, not the girls, not even her husband. Oh, so I mentioned Donald Trump and the weave. So he was on Andrew Schultz's podcast recently, and I won't spoil it if you haven't seen it, but he talks about how he weaves his stories and then comes back to where he was. Well, another thing he discusses is how he comes up for nicknames for people, and I found that part so interesting. And he uses the example of Pocahontas, which I've always kind of thought is kind of a good test for whether my humor and someone else's humor is compatible. I also like coming up with nicknames for people. But you have someone in Elizabeth Warren who used her self-proclaimed minority status to rise the ranks of academia. She even got a job at Harvard, saying she was Native American. So she has this DNA test done, presumably to prove that she was indeed Native American. And it came back true that if you go back 6 to 10 generations, now, they couldn't say what tribe or anything, but 6 to 10 generations, she indeed has some Native American DNA. So Trump says she's got less Indian blood than the average American. And here comes PolitiFact with the fact check. And like most fact checkers, their job is to explain to us lowlifes how Trump is lying to us. So they say, well, Trump is wrong. It is incorrect that Elizabeth Warren is 1/1024th Native American. Because her Native American DNA actually goes back 6 to 10 generations, whereas what Trump was citing would be 10 generations. So technically, she could be 1/64th Indian, hence the name Pocahontas. Now, I've got friends who don't think that's funny at all. They think Trump is mean for calling a woman Pocahontas. But it's not like he's calling an innocent lady a liar. Her lying about her ancestry prevented people from getting jobs, the jobs she coveted, very well-paying jobs that would have gone to probably a more deserving person, I mean, she made a career out of this stuff, and she's worth now $8 million. So you probably know this, but we're derived from two people, which are derived from four, which come from eight, 16, 32, 64, 128. So you go back six generations, we come from 64 people. So you're telling me if one of the 64 is Native American or Peruvian, then you get to claim Peruvian on your application and get the benefit of a job? Come on. You deserve the name Pocahontas. I thought it was a genius nickname, and I still laugh about it. And if you don't, and again, we our sense of humors are not the same. I don't know if you've ever been on a dating app, but everybody thinks they have a sense of humor. I disagree. I think there's probably a third of the population that has none. I'm really convinced of this. And I'm also, I'll tell you what else I'm convinced of. Have you heard the term NPC before? It's kind of a, it's like an internet term, but it stands for non-player character. I'm convinced there are non-player characters walking among us. A non-player character, an example would be if you're playing Tecmo Bowl and against the computer, those trying to tackle you are NPCs. They're not thinking people. And those people who are unable to laugh, not only are they NPCs, but if they were to laugh, it'd probably only be at somebody falling down. Like there's no, they don't get wit or jokes. It all goes over their head. But I probably shouldn't make fun of people who laugh at those who fall down, because thinking back, one of my favorite pastimes in high school was to go to the Galleria in Houston and just watch people fall on the skating rink. I thought that was so funny. And where there's no injury, there is hilarity, which might be my MO for life. Where there is no injury, there is hilarity. But yeah, you ask one of these NPCs, hey man, tell me a story from high school. And they are not capable of doing that. And we all know people like that. Or they're unable to see nuance. Or they take people's word for things and nothing comes to mind as far as a follow-up is concerned. Like somebody says, I worked at McDonald's, and they don't think to ask, well, which one? Or if they say, I did the fries, they don't think, and nobody who works in fast food says that they did the fries. Take it from someone who worked at Burger King. I actually did fries, and I would never say, oh, I did the fries, unless I was trying to be cute. But these people go through life unaware. And we all know that dude. You're walking down the street with him, and there's a big Chick-fil-A billboard in front of you with cows on it that says, eat more chicken. And it's the only thing it says. And he says something like, man, that's a huge billboard. And you say, yeah, I wonder if those cows are pissed that Chick-fil-A is closed on Sunday like I am. And he's like, why? I don't know, man. I just thought they might be. And then something happens similar 2 minutes later, and you're thinking, I'm not enjoying this. Why do I spend time with this dude? He is an NPC. You're probably better off playing with yourself or by yourself rather than play against the computer. Because when you're Bo Jackson, you got Bo Jackson, you pick the Raiders, you got two running backs, right? Marcus Allen and Bo Jackson. I think it was the only team with two running backs. And you could just take Bo Jackson, run at an angle every 10 yards, and the NPCs go diving all over the place, and then you're spiking the football on fallen ice skaters. Okay, so going back to my walk through this neighborhood with my buddy. So he's explaining to me, you realize these people aren't doctors and lawyers. They're more than likely multimillionaires who have invested well. And we talked about accredited investors and how once you get to $1 million, and I'll give you an example here in a minute, but you get access to deals that other people don't get. And usually those deals are all but guaranteed to give you 10%+ without all that much risk. And it's a shame that you have to attain a certain net worth to get access to these deals, but that's how our system is set up. Although I think that's slowly changing. So ultra high net worth folks, which is those with a net worth of $30 million or more, they have 46% of their net worth tied up in alternative assets. They're not just you and me trying to trade stocks. Not that I would ever do that, but I know a lot of people who do. And something you should know about stocks. So most traditional investments are correlated, meaning they go up and down in value in unison. This is why historically wealth managers have advocated for a balanced portfolio of stocks and bonds, the right mix typically guided by your age and risk tolerance. Maybe this is a good time to say, don't take investment advice from a podcast host. If you're doing that, you're doing it wrong. This is for entertainment purposes only. So at your age, you want to be mostly in equities or stocks because you're very much in the wealth accumulation phase, presumably. I can't know how old you are, but something like 83% of my audience is my age or younger. Then if the market drops 40%, you not only have an opportunity to gobble up stocks on the cheap, but your portfolio has plenty of time to recover. One thing that I've benefited from is having a spouse who's a good deal younger than me, because we have stayed very heavy equities despite my own age. And my thought behind that is I am more apt to invest like I'm her age, more concerned that my family's taken care of for the next 60 years, whereas in all likelihood, I'll be gone in 57. There's a show called Bigger Pockets that I was a guest on, and I thought this was such a genius move. One of the hosts, Brandon Turner, has obviously been collecting email addresses. Well, not obviously. It's not obvious that you should collect email addresses, but I'll tell you why that's important here in a second. He had so many guests on the show that had high net worths that after probably 7-8 years of doing Bigger Pockets, he decided to start raising money for these funds that invested in self-storage and trailer parks and things like that, things that are typically recession resistant. And that's so smart because the reason you want to collect email addresses is that you never know where life's going to lead you. So I was explaining this to one of my guys recently. He was talking about entering contacts into his database at work. And I said, well, if I were you, I would copy that list and make sure you keep a copy of it for future reference. You never know what you're going to be doing 12 years from now. And if you have somebody's email address, you can always sell directly to them. You can hawk your wares, so to speak. And people rarely change their email addresses. I still have the email address that my college girlfriend set up for me in the year 2000. True story. I have a Gmail now, and it's much better, but I still have that old email address. So old email addresses like phone numbers are hard to get rid of. Those who raise money get really big fees for doing so. I don't remember what Brandon Turner's arrangement is with LPs. An LP is a limited partner. So in this example, Brandon Turner would be a GP and raises money from LPs. But a lot of them charge 2%. So raise $5 million, get $100,000 in fees. And that's not all. They also typically get 20% of the upside. So for them, a base of 2% with massive upside potential. Now you know how hedge fund managers get wealthy. They don't even need to outperform the market to make bank. Take Ray Dalio, for example, author of a good book called Principles. He runs the largest hedge fund in the world called Bridgewater. Do you know Bridgewater has underperformed the S&P the last several years? And it's severely underperformed QQQ, which is a technology-focused index. Hedge fund managers, many don't realize, they not only earn fees on the money they manage, but a lot of them start many funds, which of course earn more fees. And so that's how hedge fund managers get really wealthy. You know what the super wealthy really like to own? Professional sports teams. Owning a sports team is like the ultimate vanity purchase or investment. Pro sports teams over the last 10 years have generated an 18% compounded growth rate versus 11% for the S&P 500. Over the last 20 years, the average price for an NBA team has risen over 1,000%. 20 years over 1,000%. Michael Jordan is kind of viewed as a failed owner because the Charlotte Hornets didn't win anything while he owned the team. But Jordan sold his $275 million stake in the Hornets, now called the Bobcats. He acquired that stake in 2010 and sold it for $3 billion. $275 million to $3 billion. But did you know the average investor can also invest in sports teams? Sure can. Check out CAZinvestments.com or YProSports.com, I think is still a website. CAZinvestments.com and YProSports. Even Warren Buffett invests in the Atlanta Braves holding company. Ticker symbol is BATRA. I don't own it, but I follow it. I was curious to see if the stock price would drop when their stud pitcher, Chris Sale, went down, and it did. It went down about 5%. Are you familiar with IPOs? Maybe you've had the experience of sitting around at Thanksgiving or Christmas and your uncle starts hyping up an IPO. I've had that happen a lot in my life where people get excited about IPOs. It gives you a chance to get in relatively early. An IPO stands for initial public offering, public equities. Well, returns vary. So, for example, in 2009, 81% of public companies were profitable post-IPO. In the 2020s, only 28% of companies were profitable post-IPO. And you may have heard me say this before, but 30 days after an initial public offering, 60% of those stocks are down in value. So what does that tell you? Well, you're probably better off waiting. What you're looking for in specific investments is asymmetric risk-reward, minimizing risk while maximizing returns. I mentioned QQQ a minute ago. Investing in a tech index is risky because it's a specific sector. However, that is not near as risky as investing in an individual stock, and certainly not as risky as investing in, say, TQQQ, which would give you three times the returns, but also expose you to three times the losses. In 2020, for the first time in history, stocks and bonds both went down in value 22%. Bonds have been killed as interest rates have risen. Now they're coming down a little bit. But the 60-40 portfolio had its worst year in 100 years in 2022. That's incredible. This is probably a good time to mention that on any given day in the markets, you have about a 53% chance of stocks going up, basically a coin flip. But as you increase your time in the market to 1 year, the likelihood of markets rising go to 75%. And if you're in the market 15 years, you have a 98% chance of winning. And then 20 years and 30 years, it's 100%. You know, Warren Buffett made 95% of his wealth after the age of 65. So as markets go, one of the ways to make money is just to live a long time. Buffett, of course, made big money on Apple stock. He was reluctant to invest in tech for a long time. And I remember he was asked recently, "Why did you not invest in Amazon?" And he said, "I missed it." Have you given any thought to the future of energy? Do you think it'll be nuclear? Now, we stupidly in America tend to think that nuclear is dangerous. We harbor this fear of nuclear because of the disasters that happened with Chernobyl and Three Mile Island and Fukushima. So the greenies are scared. Thus, we only have plans to build three nuclear power plants in America. There are just two under construction. Whereas China, who are by far leading the charge and going nuclear, they're in the process of building 21 nuclear sites. You see, with a communist government, you don't have tree-hugging obstructionists like we do. Even India is building 8 of them. And the Saudis are building 16 nuclear reactors. I have read recently, though, that Microsoft and Google are poised to invest in small nuclear energy facilities to accommodate all the energy requirements of AI that's accelerating rapidly. If you're looking for nuclear ETFs or stocks, these are ones that I watch, not that I own, but you can invest in nuclear ETFs, ticker symbol NLR. Another one is NUKZ. There's an individual company or stock, NNE, Nano Nuclear Energy, that's interesting. And then if you believe AI and robotics are the future, there are ETFs for that too. Ticker symbol BOTZ. That's easy to remember, right? Bots. And then the nuclear one would be Nukes, NUKZ. As far as AI and robotics goes, if you weren't to invest in Microsoft or Google or QQQ, which would give you exposure to those sorts of stocks, like a nuclear play, or I guess an AI and robotics play too. You could look at Stryker or SYK as their ticker, or Rockwell Automation, ROK is their ticker. Again, I don't recommend any of these at all. I'm just trying to share what's out there. All right, let me finish with Kids Say the Darndest Things, my favorite part of the podcast. So yesterday I'm on a walk with my daughter, and she sees the taco place that we like. So she says, "Daddy, we haven't got tacos in a while." And I said, "Well, Mommy's cooking tonight. Maybe we can get some for breakfast." And she looks at me like I've said the most impossible thing. She says, "Tacos for breakfast? That's not an option. Silly daddy." And just keeps looking down, walking. So I guess she's never had breakfast tacos. I don't know how that happens, but here's another one entirely unrelated to tacos. My little one has an abuelo and an abuela, which she conveniently abbreviates to Wella and Wello. So last weekend, we're in the backyard where Wello had put up a sail to give us some cover from the sun. And my daughter points up and says, "Wello did that. He put that up there." And I said, "Yeah, Wello's got skills." And she goes, "Nope, Wello's got tools." That too. Thank y'all for tuning in. I'll talk to you next time.